got a couple more people wandering in. Well, cool. How many of are using Azure Remote App? Either a deployment or a point of sale or a proof of concept type mode? Okay, cool. Alrighty. Yeah, we're seeing some good usage. Like I said, my fundamentals, CRM and ERP apps are pretty hot. Those seem to be the top apps being used. Let's just jump into it. We're pretty closed. Most of you, I'm Eric Orman. I'm a senior program manager within the engineering product group of Remote Desktop Team. So I'm actually, the engineers that develop Remote Desktop sit to my right and my left. So I'm in the engineering team. I spent a total of 9 years at Microsoft. 6 were on the Config Manager product group. I own many of the features for Config Manager 2012 and quite a few for 2007. And I've spent the last 3 years on Remote Desktop. So I spend all my time on Azure Remote App pretty much. And then spent 12 years in the United States Army traveling the world and doing crazy things. So most of you heard the spiel, what Azure Remote App is. How many do not know what Azure Remote App is? One? Okay. Azure Remote App is your Windows applications on any device. Yep, there you go. You got it. Move on to the next slide. So Brad had a demo of this. I talked about this in my fundamentals. I talked about what it is. It's Azure hosting your Win32 applications. They are then accessed on your particular clients. So that being Windows, iOS, Mac, Android. Yesterday I demoed our HTML5 client. I did not mention that we're actually go private preview with that. Later this week or next week. So if you guys want to be a part of that preview, you could send me an email. I have my email at the end. It's ericor@microsoft.com. We'll loop you into the private preview for that. And you know, the clients access those applications through the RDP protocol, Microsoft Remote Desktop Protocol. And the great thing about Azure Remote is it scales to meet your needs. You don't need to worry about scale up, scale down, brokering, all those different things. That's what you're paying us to do. You just worry about adding users and your applications. That's it. And assigning those. We have some different deployment options, and yesterday I covered that. That's what we call our cloud and our hybrid, but we're rebranding those into our non-domain join and our domain join. And so why Azure Remote App? And I covered this yesterday in terms of why we're seeing customers, what we're hearing. You know, a lot of you guys, proof of concepts. I do a lot of our forums, field escalations. And the two primary things that we're hearing from customers is, you know, they want to move to the cloud, cloudify, or they want to simplify, you know, reduce complexity. They're tired of managing these large-scale VDI deployments, that everything that comes with it. And the easiest way I relate that to is what O365 did for an on-premise deployment of Exchange. You know, that's heavy, you know, and O365 takes care of a lot of those things. You just need to bring your identity and your content. That's your email. Same thing with Azure Remote App. You just bring your apps and your identity. And if your identity is already with O365, well, you have half of that. You just need to bring your apps. And to get your apps on Azure Remote App is as simply as having a VHD, installing them on an image and uploading that or importing it. And I covered that yesterday in my fundamentals. So if you weren't there, I showed and I walked how to create an image and how to do all that. So it'll be available online. You guys can watch that. Bring as is, yep. Install your applications on Windows Server 2012 R2. And give it that, and what's on the image is what you can publish. Run on any device, that's access, that's all the little nuances, QuickBooks, Dynamics, doesn't matter, stream to you on any device. And we talked about that's possible now through HTML5 client, that's Linux, that's Chromebooks, it's kind of the client-less client, if you would say. In terms of the use cases, I didn't really cover this yesterday, temporary worker needs. So those seasonal things during Christmas time or scale up or tax season, those are kind of the bigger things we see. Extend that mobility out of applications to your mobile workers if you're not already doing that. And then development and test is, we see some interest from various customers where they want to create this type of isolated work environment, a development environment through Visual Studio and other things where they have vendors that just connect in and they could be a very centrally managed and isolated, tracked and audited, and they could do all their development within that bubble. And so Azure Remote App provides that bubble for their development. So in terms of the agenda today, there's my fundamental session. There's a link to the one I did in Chicago. I don't know when they'll have the one posted that I did yesterday, but as homework, I would for you that didn't watch that. But in this section, I'm going to deep dive into architecture and security, app and image configurations, user experience, and troubleshooting. And so we're going to focus on that. Now, last my fundamentals, I talked about the rate of innovation that we're having. And so I was talking to a couple of you at the booth afterwards and throughout the week, and significantly delivering value through our various feedback sites and what we hear. Every 2 weeks, we actually ship updates to our live site. We're updating and revving Azure Remote App every 2 weeks, usually on the second and the fourth week. And so that's a constant iteration. Is the best way to keep updated is through our blogs. So go out to the Remote Desktop Services blog. Every month we post one. We did the October one just recently. Anything that we changed, we enhanced, we fixed, we added, what things that are coming. This is the best way to stay engaged and updated about Azure Remote App is follow that particular blog. And then also our roadmap. So through our roadmap, we publish, hey, this is what we're coming. This is what's next. This is what's planned. And so that's available. That's out there. So when you couple those two together, you have a good idea of where our track record is for delivering, what we're improving, we're dedicated, and then you get to see where we're moving towards. In my fundamentals, I went through this life cycle of management. And this is where you as an IT admin, at the end of that, gave you enough knowledge where you could go back into your hotel or back to your organization and deploy Azure Remote App. You have a good, firm understanding. I call it Driver's Ed 101. So I went through of how to get your applications, that's you select your image, how to publish the different authentication methods. I went through the differences between domain join and a non-domain join deployment and talked about that. I'm going to talk about it more in depth today. And then the clients, and then also the updating. And so at the end of that, that gave you a good 101. And so that was fundamentals. But in this advanced session, what we want to go is let's open the hood of the car. Let's get in, let's figure out how things work, and that way you can deep dive into that. So with that, you have a general understanding of Azure Remote App service and architecture, how collection creation and how to troubleshoot that, client communication end-to-end flow, and supportability of other services, like how does Config Manager work with that, Skype for Business, and those App V, and we'll talk about that. So those are the key takeaways that we have. So yesterday we talked about, again, a caveat. If I say a cloud deployment, what I mean is non-domain join. And when I say hybrid, I mean domain join. So I went over that yesterday. And the big difference is between a cloud and a hybrid deployment is a hybrid deployment, the Azure Remote App instances are domain joined. So of course, you need to have directory synchronized accounts. The VNet that you deploy into needs to have access to the domain. So yesterday I walked through of how to create a collection. How many went to the fundamental session and then went and did this? A couple few of you? How many have actually done the collection creation, gone through and created a deployment? So what about this side? You guys haven't or you just, no? Okay, new. Eight steps, very, very simple. Click, click, click. I walked through it yesterday. I clicked the mouse eight times. It was pretty good. And then collection is provisioning. So those that created it, you know, I talked about what happens during this provisioning phase, so it seemed to be more of this side of the room. And that provisioning phase was basically, it takes 20, 25 minutes. And yesterday I used this exact same slide where I talked about, you know, what happens during that provisioning phase. We actually create clones of that master image. So the example up here, you got that master, the gold one, and we create clones of that. And how our elastic scalability work is we actually create, as users start signing on and launching applications, one of the great things about our services, we'll dynamically expand. So we'll scale up to meet the needs for users using it. And that happens all in the back end. And I'm going to talk about actually how that works here. But the fundamental point of that is really those OS instances are non-persistent. You don't want to store data on them. You always want to store it externally. So putting your like QuickBooks file actually on the custom image is bad. Putting your Dynamics database or putting a SQL Server on the custom image is bad. That always needs to reside externally. And I went over the reasons for that. So when I talk about Azure Remote App, if I were to really think about it, Azure Remote App is a non-persistent session host deployment. So it's non-persistent. So those hosts are non-persistent. We often will destroy them if our health service determines the host is bad, if there's too many failed connections to it for whatever reason, or it just goes bad for whatever reason. We'll actually destroy it and create more of them. So they're just dumb hosts for the applications. And yesterday I got some questions around, okay, well, the different billing plans, how does that work? What does that really mean when I go from a basic to a standard? Well, we use A3 large VMs, which are four cores, 7 gigs of memory, for all of our billing plans. And so when you look at the standard plan, how that relates is a standard plan will put 10 concurrent users on a VM. So users 1 through 10 will go to VM instance 1. The 11th will go to VM instance 2, and the 21st will go to VM instance number 3. That's concurrent users. So if you think about, and then for the basic plan, it's 16 users. So the 17th user, concurrent user, will go to the VM instance number 2. Make sense? Yep, okay. So you can think about, wow, I have an A3 VM, and I'm putting 16 concurrent users on there. And I'm using Office. There's some impacts to that, right? Yeah, there are. How many of you know your per-user workload? Like, how many of you have VDI deployed today, and you know that you allocate, you know, how many cores and how many memory per each user? Like, how many? So, the back row. All right. For those that you don't, let's talk about that. We're going to deep dive. One of the other nuances that we often get in the VDI world is most people prefer to use Intel chipsets. Azure has a mix of Intel and AMD. It's a random choice, so you don't get to pick that. So for that, it's just random. Sometimes you might see your deployments have AMD, and sometimes you have Intel. We can't decide that whatsoever. What we say is, hey, give us an A3 large VM, and Azure gives that back to us for us to use. So this elastic runtime, this scale up and scale down, we often get questions of, hey, does Azure Remote App scale to meet those needs? Yes, it scales up to over 10,000 today. We can go higher than that, but that is our default range that we have. And you know, we back everything through our SLA. So every Azure service has an SLA, and ours is 99.9% of the time. In fact, all Azure services have a 99.9, three nines, of connections will succeed. And so, our elastic runtime, that 11th user and stuff, so we have various algorithms in the back end to handle that scale up and scale down. And so we get often questions like, can you handle a 9 a.m. scenario? And so by default, we err on the side of conservative. And so for situations, we are still learning through our algorithm to be actually truthfully honest. And so the more users using Azure Remote App, the smarter we're going to get. We can actually put the capacity in what we call capacity mode. And so that way, if you have 10,000 users and 10,000 users all try to connect within a short amount of period of time, they'll all succeed. So I'll explain a little bit more about that. But ultimately, at the end, it's like which billing plan is needed. Do I go with a basic or do I go with standard? It depends upon your app requirements and your user activity. And so the back row, you kind of know, user capacity based upon that. So you're already kind of doing that math already in your head, I could pretty much guarantee. But for you others, you don't know. And so you want to do, trial and error. And so I talked about the resource utilization and apps and memory. But at the end of the day, there could be applications that are resource intensive. Office or Dynamics AX, Dynamics AX uses about 700 megabytes per memory per launching. So if you look at that user, I can't put 16 users, I can't use the basic plan because I'm not going to get a good experience because it's going to max out the available RAM on that. Or other apps that are prone to memory leaks. I want to put it on Azure Remote App and that, they're using it, it's got memory leaks, it's going to eventually starve that resource. If I have 16 users on there or 10, and you've got memory leaks in your applications, it's actually going to starve and it's going to have a negative impact. Same things that you guys would have today with your normal remote desktop deployments or even on local PCs. Or apps that just need more baseline for memory, I talked about that. Or CPU intensive apps, ones that fluctuate. We do CPU fair share, which means everyone will get a fair share of the pie of CPU, but not memory. There's no memory fair share. So everything above that red line, we actually have a solution for. Everything below that line requires a GPU. That's a graphical processing unit. How many of you are using GPUs today in your VDI deployments? A couple few of you. Yep. So below that line, GPUs, they're coming. So Azure announced N-Series, and we're working very closely with Azure. And so we're making those investments in Server 2016. So about early next year, you'll be able to start using GPUs with Azure Remote App. But the baseline image will be Server 2016. So we work very closely with Azure. There were some security things, so we had to make some changes. Also in Server 2016, we have OpenGL support. So if you need a GPU, it's coming early next year. But everything above the line, we actually have a solution for today. And those are our premium plans. And we just went live with those about 2 weeks ago. Time seems to be crazy, especially right now. 2 weeks ago, And so those premium plans do two things. One, before you only had basic and standard. And so we found that customers like using Dynamics, Dynamics AX, which happens to be the most popular used app in Azure Remote App, and I'm using Office, that created a workload. There's no way that they were getting a good experience with either a basic or a standard plan. They needed more resources for operating. So the premium plan will allocate 4 users onto a particular VM, and the premium plus 2 users. So if I look at the premium plan for the guys in the back row, what that really provides, if I were to, you know, premium, you know, divvy it up, you're going to get one core and like 1.75 gigs of memory. That's kind of your allocating working range for that. And so if you're using Dynamics AX and full Office, we'd recommend use the premium plan. That's a good example. The other is a 5 user limit. So one of the gentlemen's up here, there's just certain organizations that don't have a need for 20 users. And so our basic and standard have a 20 user limit with them. So if you buy Azure Remote App, you have to pay for 20 users. So with the basic plan, that would be $200. But for a premium plan, that would be $100. That's a great entry cost to using a VDI solution, $100. So a 5 user limit unblocked a lot of these smaller customers to allow them to grow into or just use it because they only have 5 or 10 users in the organization, not 20. So premium plans are available to that. Oh, these are U.S. prices, yes. So, you know, and you could switch your user plan. So after you create a collection, you can choose it at the time of that. I showed that yesterday. But now that we have the premium plans, you're like, oh, hey, I want to switch to that. Just simply navigate to it and go to the scale tab and select premium or premium plus. And after a day, it'll process and everything will, that'll take effect. So another question that we often get is, okay, you told me about this planning, you know, this many users on the VM and you're this type of VM. What are some examples of good applications versus bad applications? And so examples of good applications would be, you know, Office, Internet Explorer, Web Apps, Dynamics, most line of business applications, most of those Win32 applications. Some examples of applications that work, but kind of work in a reduced functionality might be Photoshop or AutoCAD, where the premium plans are going to be really good for those. They're great applications, but they need more CPU, or they actually operate better with a graphical processing unit, a GPU or a VGPU is kind of we call it. And so if you throw enough CPU at them, they'll operate pretty well. And so those are kind of two examples of those type of applications. And then there's just a subset of applications that just simply won't work today. And so there's a couple list of those, and they won't work for a couple of different reasons. One, they have OpenGL requirements or DirectX. They might have hard-coded GPU checks. They might even have hard-coded GPU checks for certain types of GPUs, you know, NVIDIA versus others. And so for that, what we recommend today is use on-premise RDS. But like I said earlier, we are coming out with GPU support early next year with Server 2016. And so you could do any workload, not only Azure Remote App, but if you wanted to play RDS on Azure IaaS with GPUs, that'll be available also. So we're making all those investments in Server 2016. And we'll have full OpenGL support in DirectX. That's something that we've never had in remote desktop before. So it's a great opportunity coming up on that. And at the end, always test your application. So go out, try various billing plans, look at your workload, measure it, do your testing, and you'll figure out which one works for you. And you can easily switch between the billing plans on those. So we're talking about that. Let's talk about our graphics pipeline. We've made significant investments in Windows 8 and Server 2012. You know, a lot of people are using other products such as Citrix and those, and they don't know the changes. And they've only experienced remote desktop of what it was in Windows 7 or 2008. And they didn't experience or try it or get an understanding of all the things that we added in Windows 8 and Server 2012 R2. And there's a couple list of those. But we've made vast improvements in our graphics pipeline, and we're continuing to make investments in those pipelines. So, you know, just one of those things that we implemented back there was this whole classifier. And so what that does is we actually have certain codecs that will look at the screen and classify it. So we have codecs that look and say, oh, hey, we have text. I'm going to use this particular codec. So it's optimized for text to give you that crisp and clear. We have another codec that looks at images and handles those. We have another codec that looks at video and animations. That's our H.264. And so we use that, and we couple those together, and that becomes our graphics pipeline. And then we also have progressive rendering. just much like YouTube video that you watch it, you know, things go through kind of a buffering phase, and so it goes kind of blurry, and then it gets better, and then it gets super crisp and sharp. And so we have that also that layers on top of that entire graphics pipeline. And there's lots of other benefits that we made throughout our entire stack, and we're continuing to make those for media. This is a common slide that we have for WAN optimization and such. You know, there's some other things as on the Azure Remote App instances that we installed during that provisioning phase. So kind of going back to things that might hinder that when you're trying to figure out which billing plan to go through. So when you create an Azure Remote App or even Azure IaaS VM, there's certain things that get installed on there. So Azure will natively just install some things on there, which are NT services that run. Azure Remote App stalls some things. They're kind of highlighted in here. Our Blue Agent, that's our kind of our orchestration agent that we have. And we actually install a new RDP host. So we don't use TermServ inbox. We'll actually install another remote desktop. And I'm going to be talking more about that here shortly. But just understanding that when you're baselining and you're testing Azure Remote App, be wary of also the things that are on there, because that'll affect your overall performance. But also could have impacts if you're using, you know, AppLocker or any other thing to block certain services. You might get negative results from that, because you might have things out there that say don't allow the Blue Agent to run, and if you do that, things just simply aren't going to work for Azure Remote App. So that collection creation process, let's dive into that. Yesterday I talked about you have your on-premise network, you know, your domain controller, and you have your Azure VNet, and you connect those two using an ExpressRoute VPN. So really that Azure VNet is just an extension of your on-premise network, on-premises network. And so any assets that you put in Azure VNet, you know, you should be able to ping them, just like a remote office. And during that, if you choose to create a hybrid collection, you'll need to provide us a couple of things. This is all review from the fundamental session. You know, domain name, the OU that you want to deploy it into, and your user accounts. And so when we go to create during that provisioning phase, we're going to create VMs based upon that gold image, and they're going to be domain joined. So at the end of that process, you're going to have domain joined PCs. And so when you launch applications, let's say Internet Explorer or something, it's actually on your corporate network. You should be able to surf to anything internal. And that is the basically what a domain join is. I talked through yesterday kind of the common misconfigurations that people had, the VNet not having the proper size, to the DNS, because the DNS needs to be proper, because it does do domain join, and the DNS is not proper, it's not going to find the domain controller. And the VNet, of course, needs to have access to your domain controller. Now, that domain controller, in my example before, it was on-premises connected over a VPN connection, express router site-to-site. But that VNet can, or that domain controller can be in Azure if you have a secondary domain or your primary domain in there. So in terms of your DNS, you know, looking at that before or after, make sure you check your DNS, and that can resolve your domain controller, basically the things that you provided. So VNet routing, one of the other things of that VNet is there could be situations where you use UDRs or NSGs. How many of you are using Azure and are using this today? So they basically routing rules on your Azure VNet, gentleman in the back is. So these are routing rules that on there to include forced tunneling. And so these could have impact on your Azure Remote App, your collection. So all you might not be your network administrators, the guys that do networking. You might be your app administrators or config manager. And so what I'm going to be talking about the next couple slides are things that you'd have awareness about. Take these slides, take this knowledge, and go back to your network administrator and talk to him about if things aren't working. So let's talk about that. Back to kind of the same design over here. I'm my on-premise network. It's hooked up to my Azure VNet. I have that. Well, those Azure Remote App instances need to have access to the internet. And they also need to have access back to your on-premise network for various reasons. Now, forced tunneling actually will force things back over that tunnel, which means a lot of people, like in these dev environments, will say, hey, I don't want any traffic going from those Azure VNets out to the internet directly. I want to force everything back to on-premise and then out. So they call that forced tunneling. We do support that. Actually, I should have removed that. It's not private preview. We just enabled that last month. There are a certain set of endpoints that we do. So that VNet does need to have access to the internet, and there's a list of them. We actually have this documented also But this is a slide that you would take to your network administrator and say, hey, we need to make sure that the Azure VNet has access to these endpoints if we're using forced tunneling, NSGs, or UDRs. Yesterday, I talked about our most common misconfiguration with hybrid deployment, and that was UPN suffix mismatch. Basically, the suffix that you're using is different. What you directory synchronized could have been a .local, which is a non-routable domain, up into Azure, and they need to be the same. This is well documented and understood. If you hit this issue, really make sure that you have our globally routable domain. Otherwise, you need to go back to your on-premises network and actually add the UPN suffix. If you just type UPN suffix into Bing, or if you use an O365, which, how many of you are using O365 today? Majority of you? Okay, you might have hit this issue before, but your identity is already up in Azure. More than likely, you've already solved this problem. But we see this a lot with people doing tests or proof of concepts deployments. So yesterday I talked about this app launch and really understanding what that is. And so this kind of confuses people, so I always talk about it in greater detail. So again, back to this example that we had. Yeah, you have everything set up and configured, express route, you've created your collections, users have signed in, they've chosen to launch an application, and you get this second prompt. You know, why are they getting this second prompt? That's the Windows security prompt. So the first prompt that you got when signing in is just to sign into the client to get a list of your applications. The second prompt is actually an RDP connection that's being made to the endpoints that you have up there. And so that's the same thing if you're locally, internally in your organization, the RDP from one machine to another, you're gonna get a security prompt. It's the same thing here, as you're getting a security prompt. Now, you know, there's a little box that you could hit check, but a lot of people say, hey, I don't even wanna get that. I don't even wanna get a sign in, and I don't want it over here. And we're looking at ways to actually fix that issue. But in order to do the second one, the issue why we can't do that today is basically you've authenticated to Azure. We cannot pass that token to the on-premise server today. So we're working closely with three different teams, Azure team, Windows Server Identity team, and another team within Microsoft in order to try to get rid of the second prompt. But in the meantime, you're going to get the second prompt and click the remember my creds. At the end of the day, they both need to be the same in order for a hybrid deployment or a domain join to work. That's the key takeaway for that. Talked about you can only assign users from one directory. You can have multiple domains in a directory, but we don't support multiple directory. That's pretty self-explanatory. Again, it's a catch-up. So let's talk about the flow. And so this is all new. Let's talk about the things that happen when you're actually going about launching a client. So in this example here, a user has gone out, much like you guys have tried. You went to our client download page. You selected the client to download. What's happening on the back end of that? And so what happens is you sign into the particular client. That goes up. We authenticate. The Azure Remote App Service will actually Azure Active Directory. We'll get back a token. That token will be passed to the Azure Remote App Service, and then the Azure Remote App Service will pass down a feed of the available applications. We typically call that just a web feed internally, but it's basically your list of applications. And so that the Azure Remote App client, every 5 minutes, will pull and see if there's any new applications available to the client. And so that's kind of how the client sign in and getting a list of the application flow is. We use ADL, Azure Active Directory Authentication Libraries, underneath. And I talked about how that's, because we do that, we get all that rich reporting in Azure Active Directory Premium. We get conditional access. I did not show you guys. I'll show you a demo of that here shortly. And that also allows multi-factor authentication. And so you get all the goodness of Azure Active Directory. So application usage, I could pop out and show you guys really quick. All right, my credits are gonna, good. So here, Azure Active Directory Premium, how many of you know much about that? And all the benefits, you get all good reporting and everything. So, all right, let me just show you some of those reporting things. So if I scroll over here on the left-hand side to Active Directory, I can click on, there's my directory. There's a couple of tabs up here, users, applications, groups, applications. Azure Active Directory thinks of applications of anything that uses an ADL library. In this case, it's Azure Remote App. So when you sign in, it looks at that as what they call an application. So here's Azure Remote App. I can click on it. Not much there, but if I click configure, this is where I could configure multi-factor authentication. So if this is where you would say I click on, and it'll ask me a couple of other things, but that's how I can enable multi-factor authentication for Azure Remote App. Very simple. You click on, you get to specify a couple attributes and save, and then enables multi-factor authentication. I'm not going to do that today. Configure. Actually, whoops, reports is what I want to go to. So here's a common list of reports for Azure Active Directory Premium. The one I'm going to show is application usage. And this is just going to show general usage of Azure Remote App. And so here it shows that there's been one unique user, and there's been a total of 18 sign-ins in the last 30 days. So if I click on that, it's actually going to show me the by users. Since there's only one, there's going to be one line, and that was me. And I'd signed in 18 times, and it shows the last time I signed in. But if you want a per user view, you can actually hop out and look at the per user. So I'm going to go back to the Users tab. And I'm going to dive into this here. This tells all the attributes about it. But if I go up to the activity, it's going to list all. It's going to show what time, what application, and that's Azure Remote App. It doesn't show like per app what's going on. The IP address I came from, location, what typical client. As you could see, I had quite a few in here. And all that's made possible through Azure, just using Azure. That's it, Azure Active Directory. And benefits through Azure Active Directory Premium Reporting. Let's pop out here. So multi-factor auth, I talked about that. It's pretty simple to enable. Conditional access, those are various rules that you have. I talked about those with multi-factor auth. You could specify, I only want to do multi-factor auth. If you're on my corpnet, you get to define your corpnet. I showed you the demo. I actually did it beforehand. Let's talk about the app launch. So what happens when you, I showed you the sign-in. Let's talk about when you click an application. When you click an application, what happens is we'll actually make a connection up to our gateway. It's kind of not a remote desktop gateway. We actually have rewritten that. We actually use a fully written ground up based upon Azure. So make a connection up to the gateway. The gateway will then talk to the Azure Remote App service, basically says, hey, did this user have proper access in order to do that? The service will tell the gateway yes or no. In this case, he says yes. And then what happens is the gateway actually will tell Azure Service Bus, put a message on Azure Service Bus. And then down here is the actual RDSH. These are the Azure Remote App instances. And they're listening on the Service Bus. And so if they get a message, step five, they'll take that message. They'll mount the user profile disk, because all the user data is on the user profile disk. They'll mount it, and then it will make a reverse connection up to the gateway. And step seven, as magic happens, the connection succeeds. This is very different than the way a typical remote desktop gateway works. As noted in here, there is no inbound connections that are being made here. Everything comes through as a listener, you know, on five. We listen and we make outbound. That's because you're isolating those particular networks, and we actually have a multi-tenant gateway. And so I think that's the key point on that one. And so during that, we actually have broken down things into six phases of kind of that app launch. Seven is really just the magic, just making the connection. But during that, there's about six different phases. And so typical app launch that we've seen through our telemetry is if you have a hybrid or a cloud or a non-domain join, it takes about 15 seconds. So first morning, when you click an app, it's going to take 15 to 20 seconds for that app to launch. After that, it's going to be pretty quick. I talked through that yesterday. For a hybrid, it's about 30 to 35 seconds. And why is it more than the other? There's a couple of things. So we need to first look at the phases. So there was gateway brokering orchestration, RDSH, but the session login. So just like if you were on a domain join PC and you log in, there's lots of things processing on the back end. You know, some of those things could be startup scripts, GPOs. There could be other apps that are running, other things. In a hybrid deployment, since it's domain joined, it's on your local network. So if the config manager agent's doing stuff, or ops manager, or if you're targeting GPOs, If you have a slow native log on to your domain, it's going to have the same experience in Azure Remote App. You're just going to get a perception that it's different. So it's very important to understand that if you have login times, like there was a guy I was working with today, his login time was 2 minutes, 30 seconds. So it's like, hey, what's going on? So he looked at his GPOs. He had random GPOs, startup scripts. Things were just processing. His normal login time for his PC was about 3 minutes. So actually, Azure Remote App was faster than his login of his local PC. And it's like, hey, take a look at what's going on in your environment. So that's really key. The other thing is a first time ever. Kind of got cut off down here. The first time ever, like if I were to sign Joe and he launches Azure Remote App for the first time ever, he's going to have a little bit longer, like a 5 second longer time, depending upon how big his default profile is, because the user profile disk will need to be created. And actually, if your default profile that's on the custom image is big, it's going to have to copy to the user profile disk. And so just that first time ever might be a little bit longer. After that, it'll be fine. So simple thing is when you guys are talking about, have a deep understanding of the six phases and looking at that. What we've just enabled on the back end for us as a service, we actually have implemented telemetry, and we just did this last month. We broke that down. So here's an example. These are internal reports that we have, and it's helping us learn more about where we can do optimizations. Because on the slide before, the only thing that you have ability to change is that session log on through looking at your GPOs and other things. You don't have the ability to adjust the gateway, the broken orchestration. Those other five things are on us to fix. And so we needed to have a deep understanding of what those are. And so we implemented telemetry. We now have a full view across that. And we're actually looking at the data and optimizing and looking at where we can make changes on that. So that's part of the thing. We're shipping twice a month. We're making changes. We're making improvements. We're looking at the data. And so on here, it's kind of easy to see, some examples. The stage one, the gateway, that was pretty quick. Stage two, brokering, it's got a tail end, but then orchestration looks like, there's some bumps. That's not very good. What's going on? It gives us a point of view where we can go and look at that. Stage four in the bottom left-hand corner, looks good, but like that session log on, this guy's got a tail end. It looks kind of like a crocodile that I saw yesterday. What's going on? Why do some users have good and some don't? It's something to investigate on that. And then phase six. So we actually look at this data, we're looking at it, and optimizing where we can make changes to it. So RDP host. So I talked about we don't use the inbox term serve. And the primary reason we do that is for our flexibility and agility. We're constantly making updates, looking at client telemetry. And just as we have client improvements, we actually do it on the host side also. So this is kind of just a general flow. Fundamentally, we needed to change it because the way our client works, we're using Azure Service Bus to listen to those incoming requests. We have a new shell. We've optimized it and making changes where we need to. We actually just made a recent update to our RDP display driver, solving it. The great thing about a service is we get immediate feedback through our telemetry. Our engineers love it because they get to look at the telemetry and they get to say what's going on. And so as they tweak things, they get to see it really quick, improvements on that. So they actually get to make faster improvements and gains as opposed to before where it was, hey, we got to ship Windows Server or whatever. I ship it and maybe 3 years down the line, I get some feedback that something's broke or not optimized or came up through CSS or something. The great thing about a service is they're constantly learning and we're evolving. And so all those improvements that we make here, many of those we're making in Server 2016. So we talked about different ports, but really, this is the meat slide. Take your pictures or whatever, get this thing. This is what, in terms of the VNet within Azure that you want to take back to your network administrator and say, hey, our VNet that we deployed Azure Remote App into needs to have access to these particular endpoints through these particular ports. So one of those other things that we've, constantly learning, when we went live with our service, we saw an overwhelming amount of failures. So we went live like May 2014 with our preview, and we noticed a lot of connections were failing. It was a significant amount of connections. So a day after we shipped preview, we're seeing all these failed connections. It's like, what's going on? We wouldn't have known that if we shipped a product, but through a service and our telemetry, we're able to see that. And so as we started looking back at that and understanding why and digging and investigating, what we did is we actually made two connections. One would be on 443, and then we made another connection on a non-standard port. Well, a lot of organizations would only allow connections outbound on 443 and be blocking connections on random ports. And so that was causing connection failure, app launch failures. And so through our telemetry, we realized, wow, that represented a huge amount. We need a change. So within less than 3 months, we went back, we completely rewrote our entire transport. It's now all on 443. It's WebSockets based. And we're paying that dividends not only in Azure Remote App, but also to Server 2016 also. We're using a dedicated RDP host. And so all at the end of that, those two things go hand in hand, our client improvements and also on the host. So connection troubleshooting. The biggest thing that we see in terms of failures is scale up. That's kind of one of the big things. And I talked about how we scale up and scale down. And so as more users, we'll always, I think by default today, keep two VMs running. And so if you're like the 11th user or the 21st user, there might be times where users will not be able to connect and you'll get a message, so it's scaling up. So we could put on capacity mode. And we actually look at that on the back end. And we fine-tune. So if customers are hitting this, we actually will turn this on for you on the back end. We're really fine-tuning that. Disk space is another one where the VHD fills up. For whatever reason, you know, there's people were copying files to it or pre-staging content. There was a customer who was pre-staging config manager stuff, and it the client content got so big it filled the disk space up, or he was putting app V applications on there and it was just causing it to fill up. That's going to cause issues. The UPN mismatch or the DNS suffixes are just common failures. So, you know, thinking about that, there could be issues of why an app launch or it's cold or why what's this layer of slowness? So we get this also of like, hey, Azure Remote App is just being slow. Interaction with the apps, it's just slow, I'm going to leave. That problem could be in a number of different places. So here's an example of American Furnace, or one that would be in a commercial. You know, you've got an intake that sucks the air in from the outside. It goes to a blower that then blows the air over the coils. You got to heat the coils. And then it goes out various through the ductwork. So like the same thing of that, of like those particular things, we can peel back the layers of that with Azure Remote App and look at, you've got your remoting, you know, from the client up, that latency, or the VM congestion, or it could be the UPN or VPN connection, or it could just be data on the server. So let's dive in and look at these particular things. So here we are back again. On the left-hand side, you have your on-premise network, and over there, you've got your database or your file servers, and of course, Azure Remote App. So in this example, let's say you're hosting Dynamics AX or some client server application up in Azure. Well, the first thing that you're going to you could possibly hit, well, let me do this little graph again, is your remoting latency. And so yesterday I talked about Azure Speed as an example of doing that. How many of you have heard of Azure Speed before? I think everyone yesterday. But this is a really simple way of going out and just, this is how you can measure your latency. Nothing fancy, go to your browser, check it out, it's gonna launch. And it's gonna measure the latency from this PC to all the different Azure networks. And as you can see, you know, Australia, of course, I'm glad that that is the fastest network. You know, India, you know, here's 142 milliseconds. And then Europe, EMA. So if I, you know, some of these other ones. So if I, the impact of that is if I deployed my Azure Remote App instances into, you know, a geographical region, and the latency between where I'm at and there is really, you know, 377 milliseconds, that's just really far. The thing for that is move to a faster network. That would be your first thing if they're remoting latency. So something to test out. Talked about that, the remoting latency. The next would just be VM congestion. And for that one is very simple. I showed it yesterday, and I could show it here again if you some time, but I'm kind of running a little bit long. Basically, do a Control-Alt-End, launch a task manager, investigate, see if there's contention. And we talked about users using or memory-hungry applications on that. The next one would actually be that VPN connection. You know, if there's a long latency or it's a congested because you're using anything else for the express route connection. And then lastly, it could be your actual databases, your information data. Just using them could be slow. So there's a couple layers as you investigate maybe reasons why Azure Remote App is slow or the end users are complaining. Here's a couple of different ways to look at that. I talked about Azure speed. Here, just typical with a connection, if you have a live connection, you could just send a Control-Alt-End. You're going to get a SAS screen, and you could simply open up Task Manager and investigate the VM issues. I showed this at the end yesterday. I can show you guys again today with a live deployment if you want. But ultimately, I think you guys all know how to use Task Manager. Launch it. You could look. You could see, hey, Eric, me, this was this morning. I'm using a whole bunch of CPU, but my memory, I've got quite a bit. But you can imagine if you have 16 users on there or 10. You know, it's an easy way. It's a really simple way of troubleshooting. It's what you do on your own PC if things are running slow. You open up Task Manager and you look at it. So another way, like a lot of people don't like actually going back. So also with Task Manager, you can just open, you know, file open. You could launch Explorer, MMC. You can look at event logs. You could do all that. Another way you could troubleshoot is maybe you want the full desktop. So, you know, here's a very long-winded thing. You can actually RDP to those Azure Remote App instances. So kind of an easy way, if you're on CorpNet, those PCs are already on your network. You could just simply remote desktop to them. MSTSC, do the /admin. That'll bypass the licensing checks on it and allow you to connect as an administrator. So within Azure Remote App, you might not be, so you have to use a jump box. So a simple example of that is, let's say you have Azure Remote App, you did the Control-Alt, you can launch Command Prompt. You just need to get the IP address. Once you have the IP address, create another Azure VM, which is really just your jump box. And then from your client, you'll remote desktop to it. And then from there, you'll remote desktop to your Azure Remote App instances. If you use the /admin, you'll be able to get to the full desktop screen of it in order to do administrative stuff. Kind of just a roundabout way of troubleshooting it. So this is a good way of looking at things if you need that full desktop. Test connectivity. How many of you have seen this before? How many of you use this? A couple of you use an ADFS? Oh, wow. Wow, the last time I gave this to our MVPs, like only one guy raised his hand. That's cool. yeah, this is a great way to test. If you use an ADFS and things aren't working, great tool. Go out there and run it. Basically, Office 365 tab. Do the test. You enter in a username, and it's going to run through some tests and tell you what's wrong with your ADFS deployment. So layers of security. We also get this question from various people. You know, is Azure Remote App secure? Or I want to make sure that my data is protected. Is it? You know, what are the different layers of security? And so I actually just created this slide recently over this last week and a half based upon some general feedback we got. So, you know, here's an example of your user. He's made a connection to Azure Remote App over ExpressRoute to the database. So that's what that red line represents, is they've accessed through the application something on that database. And so, you know, thinking about the layers of security, the first layer of security is always Azure Active Directory and conditional access. So you have to sign in order to get the list of your applications. You know, so if you have certain rules like multi-factor authentication or those particular things, they're actually going to affect that. Or just earlier this week, we announced that the iOS and Android clients are now MAM-aware. So if you're using Intune, you can actually set policies on them to say, hey, I don't want to be on a managed client. I don't want to have access on an unmanaged client, only on a managed client. And so there's various MAM policies that could be applied. That's another layer outside of that. All that is because of conditional access through Azure Active Directory. Kind of the next layer might be the outbound firewalls and GPO. So these instances are on your network. You can apply GPOs. You can apply firewall rules that say, you know, whatever. There's lots of things. Daniel has a session tomorrow where he's talking about GPOs. I'm not going to get into that. But he's got a session tomorrow at what time? 9:45. He'll be talking about various GPOs that people apply to their Azure Remote App or RDSH instances. So that's another layer of security that you can control. The next would be those VNet routing rules. So we talked about those NSGs and UDRs. It's basically controlling where traffic flows. So you could say, hey, I don't want certain data or traffic going back through the express route. VPN routing. Whoops, I got ahead of myself. VPN routing. So once the data gets on your network, or the traffic, where can it go within your corporate network? That's another layer that you can actually control where that data comes. And then the final layer would be your domain controller. So you're protecting it through Kerberos or NTLM, you know, however. But all of these make up kind of these layers of security of what protects the that data at the end. Kind of make sense? Yeah, pretty cool. So trying to stitch this together, this slide kind of provides those different layers of what those are that we get. So we talked about firewall rules. Azure Remote App does not create any firewall rules. Just want to say that. Remember, we're only listening, and we're making outbound connections. That's it. So we're not punching holes and exposing the Azure Remote App instance to the internet. We always make outbound connections to that. There are certain GPOs. We talked about that. Daniel will be talking about that. But there are certain GPOs that just do not apply to Azure Remote App, pretty much all the RDS. So if you try to set the session timeout, that doesn't apply. You try to change anything else in the RDS through the group policies, those are not going to apply. But there's other GPOs that will affect things, and we kind of talked about that, about if you prevent Blue Agent or you set various other things on there that could cause impacts. Key thing here, evaluate your GPOs that you're applying to that particular OU that you deploy Azure Remote App into. So here's our service. We do have our service limits publicly published. So we talk about how big and how much. I'm not going to go into detail on that, but every Azure service publishes their service limits. Disaster recovery, we often hear, hey, how does DR work for Azure Remote App? I want to put my trust in Azure Remote App. Do you have DR? Because we use DR in our on-prem. You know, if something's bad, you know, what about Azure Remote App? You have a 99.9% SLA, that's great, but do you have disaster recovery? Is my data protected? Is my user profile disk? The answer to that question is yes. So Azure service is geo-redundant. In fact, in every data center, we have a deployment of Azure Remote App. But in terms of your deployment that you choose, like I choose West US to deploy Azure Remote App into, it's only there. So if the West US data center is down, you will not be able to use Azure Remote App. So be wary of that. What we've seen customers do, because they would like redundancy in that, is they will deploy Azure Remote App and be using it as kind of their live site in, let's say, West US. And then in East US, they'll have another deployment, exactly the same, but they won't assign all their users to that deployment. So their backup, their DR situation, if, let's say, West US data center's down, they'll just assign all those users over to East US, and they'll be able to continue seamlessly. Services integration. So how many are you using Config Manager today? A third. AppV? Even less. Skype for Business? All right. And I already saw O365. So let's talk about Skype for Business. Skype for Business works, but it's not officially supported. We actually use it. I use it in Azure Remote App, but it's officially not supported. So I want to just be very clear with that. Instant messaging, microphone, desktop viewing, those all work. Desktop sharing is not. It just doesn't work whatsoever on that. And then we have various plugins if you're using it. Those don't really apply to Azure Remote App. So just a caveat, it works, not officially supported. Config Manager. Yes, it is supported. We actually have a large number of customers that are using Config Manager with it, but this is a non-persistent deployment. So what's the real use of Config Manager in a non-persistent deployment? It makes sense in a persistent, but in a non-persistent, where those Azure Remote instances might get destroyed or created often, and there are certain features of Config Manager that are good. You know, keeping those instances updated with definition updates is good. Using DCM or asset tracking, inventory, software metering, those are examples of good features to use with Config Manager with Azure Remote App. Features that are not recommended would be like remote control. That would not be a good one. Software updates or software distributions. Now, the reason for that is if you have those multiple instances and you're doing software updates to them or software distributions, the gold state is always that gold image. So you've deviated from that state because we oftentimes will destroy those or we'll create more of them, and they're going to deviate from that original. So if you're doing software updates, patch the gold image. If you're doing, you need to make changes to your applications, patch the gold image, create another gold image or update it and go through that process again. Definition updates, certainly keep them up to date and publish them. But we do not recommend that you use software updates or software distribution to those because they are non-persistent. Kind of makes sense? Yep. You guys are all, I see head nods. Using Office in Azure Remote App. So I covered it yesterday. Office Pro Plus is the only way to use Office in Azure Remote App. And so if you that comes bundled with all E3 and E4 subscriptions. You can also buy it as an add-in. So we don't support Office 2010, 2007. We don't support those versions with the SPLA. If you have a SPLA with O365, we do support that. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you just need Office 365 Pro Plus. That's the key takeaway. So we get this feedback a lot, like, okay, how does licensing work? Well, if you buy Azure Remote App, Office is a separate cost. It's not bundled with it whatsoever. So I pay for Azure Remote App. I also have to pay for O365. So how does that all work? Well, it happens through shared computer activation. So if you have launch Office for the first time, you're going to get a box that looks exactly like this. And you'll just enter in your email address in there, and you click Next. And basically, after you click Next, it'll go through and authenticate. But if not, you're going to get a red bar. You're going to be in the reduced mode because it just didn't work or the user's not assigned in O365. In that case, you'd just be in the view-only mode for that. Oh, I forgot to mention. If you're using ADFS, you will never get prompted for shared computer activation. It'll just automatically authenticate all the way through. So that's one benefit of using ADFS that we found. You'll be in reduced mode. You'll have to accept the EULA. That's only once that you'll ever have to do this. And so again, the shared computer activations, those don't count towards your number of users. So you get 5 activations. Shared computers don't count towards that list whatsoever. So Azure Remote App launches of Office don't count towards those particular ones. That's key. Now, Visio and Project are not included in Pro Plus, but they do support shared computer activation. And we provide some UI that says if he's subscribed. That's just some fanciness in that. AppV. How many, again, were using AppV? Yeah, there's lots of different ways to deploy AppV. It is supported. It is only supported in a domain-joined deployment of Azure Remote App, so a hybrid deployment. There's lots of different ways to deploy it. I mean, when you look at the delivery method, you could be streaming or mounted in terms of where the content is. It shared content on the disk, targeting user, global machine. And there's a couple of positives and negatives in terms of what to use when using Azure Remote App with AppV. I had to think about that. But for the most part, you should be able to just lift and shift it. And so what does that really look like? Here's 5 steps to using AppV in Azure Remote App. The first one, you need to have a custom image. And in your custom image, you, of course, need to install the AppV agent and provision it. But really, if you have a hybrid deployment and it's already connected up through VPN, you're totally fine. You create the custom image, that's step one. And you need to configure that AppV agent. You guys are probably already doing this through group policy or scripts. You can also do it before you sysprep the image. For those that were doing AppV, how many do you use more group policy or scripts, or how do you configure the client to look at the publishing server? Or group policy? That's what we see most people doing. You create an Azure Remote App collection, you publish the AppV to the Azure Remote App OU, and then you publish the AppV apps, and I showed that yesterday of actually how to do that. Pretty very simple, just looking at that. Step 4, I go to the AppV publishing service, I publish it, I added animation. To the OU that you specify, the Azure Remote App instances are in that OU. You just target that machine group, and they're available to you. Then what you'll need to go back to is AppV, figure out that big, long GUID in the package path. Go back to Azure Remote App, and you publish the path, and you basically just specify that path. And that's it. That's how you can easily use AppV. You don't actually need to put the AppV package on the custom image. You can actually keep it separated and just use your image, and then just if you change out AppV apps or anything, it's just naturally going to use it. So you don't need to update the image every time. Client experience. So we talked about the client. One of the most often things is, why no RD web? Well, we have the HTML5 client coming out. And so that is the replacement. We don't use the inbox client. I talked about the reasons why for that, because our rate of innovation. And so we can actually now talk about our HTML5 client, which is great. We will soon have an MSI package. So if you're using Config Manager or GPO, you can actually deploy the Windows client out. Languages. How many use different languages? Yep, pretty good. So your keyboard settings can be synchronized. We often get this question a lot. So in your custom image, if you, let's say you're using Chinese, I want my Chinese keyboard to be synchronized. What you can do is, in, when you're creating your custom image, just make sure you add the language packs. And when users connect, the language and keyboard and everything are going to synchronize just as you would expect it to. But you need to install the language pack in that custom image. Office has their own language packs. If you use one of our custom images, we already have our gallery images have it in it to include our Microsoft images. But if you're building your own image, there's also Office language packs, same way. Install that when you're installing O365 on the particular run. What we don't have, and what I would recommend you go out and vote for, we have an awesome feedback site. We prioritize a lot of our investments in engineering based upon the feedback we get on our feedback site, also through customer engagement. So one of the things that we don't have, and I typically always get a question of, what about file type association? So what this means is, let's say I have a Word document on my desktop. I don't have Word natively installed. I want to be able to double click on that Word doc, and it will launch the Azure Remote App Word and stream it. We don't have that today. So we don't have, we just call it file type associations. Go out to our feedback site, vote for it, and let's make that happen. Time zone synchronization. This is a good one. This works for all of our clients, a native thing of the RDP protocol. So if I have my phone and I were to then launch Azure Remote App, since whatever the time is here, it's going to synchronize that up with my remote app. So if I'm using some Excel doc and I say, you know, input the time or time tracker, it's already going to synchronize. Now if I go to my phone, I disconnect, and I go to my phone, or one of you other guys connect up, you know, on the same, and I'm back in Redmond, Washington, Seattle, Pacific time zone, it's going to synchronize to that. So the time zones will always synchronize to your particular device that you have. It's just an interesting thing. Worked with a customer. He was like, hey, this is really unique. I didn't know that did this, because he had a time tracker and he wanted everything in certain times. But he really was surprised by this. So something to just understand how it works. Yesterday, I talked about redirection. Drive redirection and USB redirection are not enabled by default. You have to use Azure PowerShell commandlets in order to enable that. But everything else is copy, paste, audio, printer, serial ports, COM ports, plug and play. Those are all enabled by default. It's just those two are not. And our Windows client is fully has all of those capabilities. Now, one of the things yesterday I didn't put in there, a question that I got is, will the HTML5 client support printers? It's planned. It's planned, but it currently out, when we go live with the public preview, it will not support it. So it's something that's planned. And you already heard me say constant iteration. It'll be coming up. Now, there's some USB and printer devices that need to be enabled at a per-class level. So I get this feedback. Web cameras are pretty notorious for this. So basically, you need to enable it. You need USB redirection. And it's like, well, why is the USB camera not working? Well, you have to enable it per class. Easiest way to do that, this is looking, you know, we'll optimize this eventually. But just if you hit this problem, here's a good to know. Basically, take that web camera, plug it into your local PC, open Device Manager, figure out the instance class, and then go back to the commandlets and specify it. It's not great right now. It's a pretty horrible experience, but just we need to fix this. But just visibility, if you guys are trying this at POCs, this is the current experience today. This is the same experience that you would have if you're using native RDP today whatsoever. One of the other things that we get from customers is, they get this confusing experience. So they'll go to, let's say, Word, and they'll go File, Save, and they'll get a file explorer that looks much like the left-hand side. And it's like, wow, I've got this PC. Is that the Azure Remote App PC, or is it my local PC? And then I see that, oh, what is this C drive? And it has my name of my PC listed there. And there's two of them. And then I see the C drive. What is that? And so it becomes a very confusing experience because you're hooked up to Azure Remote App Instance. It's a Windows server. So this PC is actually the Azure Remote App Instance. And then the drives are redirected. That's what these C drive is, because they have drive redirection enabled. And so you could, through various group policies, actually, you know, hide and filter a lot of those things out. I was talking to a gentleman earlier today. This is what he did for his customer. And basically, he only shows the redirected drives, which gives a very clean user experience to your users. There's various GPOs in order to hide those. They're very basic, naturally within Windows. One of the other things we get is, why don't you support groups? Well, groups is eventually coming with Azure Remote App. But in the meantime, you could stitch together some solutions. Like Aran, he's been blogging a lot about Azure Remote App and other things. He did AppV, he did Ops Insight. I think he did another one for User Profile Disk recently. He's doing a lot of cool blogging out there on Azure Remote App. But what he did is he created some scripts that leverages Azure Automation and Scheduler that will go out on a specified time and look at, hey, here are the users in this group, enumerate them, and add them to Azure Remote App. So it's a way you can stitch together some solutions in order to accomplish a task. So this is when people say, hey, I need to have groups. I just point people to this blog and say, hey, this guy has a really cool solution out there. Image upload, troubleshooting, I kind of talked about this yesterday. At the end, I hope today, I filled in a lot of the gaps. So between the fundamental session and today, you now have kind of a good 400-level understanding of Azure Remote App between those two. So for you that did not go to the fundamentals, watch that. I walk you through that journey, that life cycle of Azure Remote App. Take that information, couple it with today, and you're going to have a pretty good 400-level understanding of Azure Remote App. And again, staying engaged, our feedback forum, our discussion forum, our documentation, our monthly blogs, those are the best ways to stay in touch with us. I'm Eric Orman. There's my email. Feel free to email me with any questions that you guys have. But it's been an honor coming out, talking to you guys here in Australia, and I hope you enjoyed this session. So I talked really, really fast. Anybody have any questions? Yeah, good. Your hand, that was bold. So, yes, sir. So in my Ignite, I showed it. You could use Shadow, like since you know those instances are on your, the question was, how do I do remote support? So like Shadow, remote assistance, I wanna see what they have. There's a couple of options out there. You know, natively Microsoft technologies, Microsoft remote assistance does work. Yes, yep, it does work. I should blog about it. I actually, if you watch my Ignite presentation from Chicago, at the very end, I show that. You could use Shadow. So in Windows Server 2012 R2, we actually had the feature of Shadow where you could do all that. So if you know those instances, you can connect to them in Shadow. In terms of third-party products, there's solutions out there. I know TeamViewer supports multi-sessions and has that particular thing. So I don't know of other ones, but it does work with Microsoft Remote Assistance, and you can do Shadow. I mean, the instances are on, the VMs are running on your network. So as long as you enumerate the list. We do have commandlets available that will enumerate the list of VMs. We haven't added it to the UI. One of the things on a roadmap for December is we'll be in the new Azure portal, the BISA portal as we internally call it. And so coming, I think, our engineers are quickly working towards getting that up and going. And so next year, we'll have a lot of cooler things in there. So we haven't been making the investments in our current portal because they've been working on getting in the new portal because they want everyone to be in the new portal by February. So we have a hard deadline for that. So there's some things that we just haven't put in there. So the per app publishing, that'll be available via commandlets. And then also we just released recently ability to enumerate the list of VMs that are available in the collection. So those are some cool things. If you go to my blog, the October blog, we talk about it and we provide links of how to do it. So that's how you can get a list of the VMs. We actually show what user is on a VM, too. So it's a simple commandlet. It'll show the VM name and the users that are assigned to it. And then you could just simply, you can figure out how to connect to it either proactively or the user can initiate a connection through remote assistance.
Can you trash the instance from PowerShell?
Yes, you can. Yep.
A question?
Oh, question was, can I trash the VM for whatever reason? You could remote desktop. It's on your network. You have full admin access to it. You could do whatever you want with it for the most part. So yeah, you can't necessarily trash it because we'll just keep rebuilding it. You could put it in a bad state that our service knows and we'll trash it. But you can do a delete VM and it will basically destroy that instance for you. Always, yes. Yep.
Is there ID domain services in public?
Yeah. Yes, it can. There's a big caveat to that, though. Daniel's going to actually talk about it in his session tomorrow. I had it in my fundamentals. So we have a hard-coded check. So that's basically a hybrid deployment, a domain join. And when you go to add a user in a hybrid deployment, we do a check to see if they're dir synced or not. And so we don't. That's if you're doing, you know, the typical on-premise. I have AD Connect or dir sync up. Azure knows that, and we actually check a flag in Azure. Azure has not provided a flag to us that says, are they dir sync to Azure Active Directory domain services yet? So there's no way for us to know that. And because of that, we'll only support Azure Active Directory domain services right now while it's in preview mode if you've done dir sync up. So you have to. It's not all-inclusive yet. So we've asked them to provide this flag so that we can do that, but they haven't yet. So you need to, it only works today if you are using a true hybrid deployment. Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Any plans for a user to be able to be added to multiple collections?
Why? Why do you want to use, question was, why wants to add a user to multiple collections?
So let's say if I have a set of apps for one lot of users, you know, like maybe admin, office worker, so I only want to give some people access to office, and I want to give some people access to office.
So we'll have, that's what I meant by per app publishing or per user publishing that's coming, where it's like, Susie and John only have this app and other ones have that app. So that's why I asked on that. So it's coming, it's in PowerShell. It'll be available hopefully by the end of this month or early next year. By the end of the calendar year, that'll be made available.
But would all of those apps exist on that one server?
Yes, yep.
Okay. What if you need to run two versions of the same app and they can't run on the same server?
That would be a use case.
Yes.
To have a user in multiple collections.
Yep.
AppV might be a good way to do that,
yeah.
Or email us and we'll actually enable it for you. But there is a billing cost because every collection a user is assigned, you'll be charged for that.
Yeah.
So use a standard plan, you'll be charged $20 a month for that.
Yeah.
But if you email us, we actually document it remoteappforum@microsoft.com and say, hey, I don't enable users to be assigned to more than one collection, we'll do that for you. But natively, it's like we want to understand the reasons why, and it's a lot through education. That's where we originally didn't have that, and then we went and implemented it because we didn't have per app publishing. And so people were creating multiple collections, and it was like, oh man, that's just ugly. So we needed to prioritize, we got the work done and did that, and so we're coming out with it. Yes, sir.
So the other use case would have been if you've got your premium apps that need the higher specs and your lower specs.
No, just throw them all in one. Why? Just throw them all in one. Don't worry about that.
So whereabouts do you set the different basic, the standard, premium?
You can either, you could set the billing plan
yep.
when you create the collection,
yep.
or afterwards, like, and the collection you can go to it. Let me just show you guys some right here. I had a little screenshot, but you probably didn't catch it. All right, let's go back over here. I didn't have a lot of demos this time because I talked a lot, fill in the gaps, my last session was. So here's my collection, I click onto it. There's all these tabs up here, sessions. If I have active sessions, look, that was the one active right here. Actually, what I didn't show is you can actually send messages. I can log this guy off here, I could disconnect him, or I could actually send him a message, which is kind of cool. So, I'm sorry? Yeah, eventually we might add that. Go to the feedback site and vote on it. But the scale, this is where you would set it. So basic, standard, if I want to move to premium, I would select that. If I wanted to go to premium plus, that's where I would. I'd click save. It takes about 24 hours to process, and then you'll be on that new billing plan. That's how you move between the billing plans.
Apart from the shared machine,
Hold on just a sec. He was next right here.
Okay. So the question I've got is around testing.
Okay.
So we've got remote app deployment, and because we've got a large amount of users and we've got to roll out new images, and we want some users to go through and do testing, the only thing that we have to run up a new collection, which has billing costs associated with it.
Yep.
Is there any plans to have some sort of limited?
Yeah.
You know, or like a collection that.
Yeah, a test collection or a proof of concept. Yeah, you know, getting I'll caveat that question of getting premium out was a pretty big thing for us. We really wanted to try to focus on it. The five users we were, so I email every customer that stops using Azure Remote App. So like, people are using it and then they stop using it or they quit paying for it or something. I email them. I get a lot of interesting replies, but allows me to talk to 318 customers in August and September. Well, actually, those are the people that like replied to me, but lots. I take that data, I go and talk. You know, a lot of those people, they were just trying it out. They were paying to continue their trial, or some of the people found blockers. It's like, oh, hey, I need a web client. And it's like, oh, hey, okay, are you under NDA? I could talk about web client. I told them HTML5. They've come back. A lot of people were like, I only need 5 users. You know, quit making me pay for 20. I only need 5. And so it's like, oh, hey, we have the premium plans. And so through that one-on-one engagement, we actually won back a significant amount of those people in educating. So through that, we said, hey, definitely, we need to add something more than the basic and standard. So that's how the premium and premium plus came to be on those particular things.
We're on premium plus.
Cool.
Sorry, premium at the moment.
Cool.
But the problem specific to us is when you've got 80 users.
Yep. So the other angle is people just want a small proof of concept. They just want to test it out, a dev environment, and test. And we just don't have that today. So what you're stuck with is like the premium on that. You're going to have to pay for another collection on that. So that's kind of the other angle. People wanted lower users. And initially when I started getting replies from customers, I just said, okay, they need less than 20 users. They need less than 20 users. And then I got a couple of unique ones. They were like, I only need like me to test it out, a proof of concept, a test collection. And so my line of questioning became different. And so overwhelmingly people just needed 5 users and a premium plan for capacity. The next thing that we need to figure out is this like test or proof of concept or, you know, 1 or 2s, you know, something. Maybe we throw an A1 VM up there and you just can only assign 1 user to it, but allows that testing or that UAT things. So we haven't solved it today, I'm sorry, but you know, go with the premium plan, it'll be less. And again, you only get charged for billing when you have users assigned. So if you add a user for testing and he only uses it for a couple minutes, he's only gonna be charged for that particular thing.
There's a minimum buy-in per month.
Yes.
It
depends upon how many users that you have, so in your organization. All right, who was? I think you were next here, sir.
I was just going to say, I kind of assume that's where the session shadowing would be, but because it's not, where are you actually going to shadowing the sessions?
Oh, what I was talking to him over here? Yeah. Oh, I'm on corporate network. Let's say my PC is on the corporate network. Those Azure Remote App are connected up through a VPN on there. I just need to get a list of what those are. And I could ping them. I can do all that. So once you get a list of what the host name or the IP address is, then you could just do a simple shadow. You can remote desktop to them like I was going to do it. You just need to get a list of them. Yep. Exactly. I don't know. I think we've kind of thought about that in that sense. I don't see a reason why we wouldn't just continue with it, but I get the point. I've had that question a couple of times.
The question was?
Oh, the question was, will you make us use Server 2016 and stop with Windows Server 2012, or will you allow us to continue to use 2012 R2? And I don't know the answer to that question yet. Yes, sir, in the back.
Is there any plans to actually put it on MSDN licensing model in place for a remote app? So if you want to add it into an MSDN subscription.
I would move to the premium plan. I mean, you only get like $150. I have MSDN, so, you know, but I go with the premium plan because it'll only use up $100, because before it would just eat it up really, really fast. So I think that goes along with exactly his. He wants a small proof of concept, come to tinker around. I don't want to use it for production. I don't want to use it for those, but I still want to kind of tinker around with those particular things. Meantime, if you guys need to do that, you know, if you have a trial, just send us an email. We'll extend your trial.
Cool.
Yes, sir. Yeah, so we're following along. We got ISO certified. We're waiting on the delivery of the receipt, the certification to say, and we're moving along other ones. I think we've got HIPAA and quite a few others planned for next year. But we're following the standard Azure compliance and process that they have for services. Yeah, we need to get certified. Not being HIPAA at this time has impacted us from customers using Azure Remote App. Yes, sir. Yeah, it's handled automatically, and it's random. The VMs get named on random. Yes, sir. Sorry, hold on. Did I miss anybody over here? I've been speaking over here. Like, here. I'm trying to get everyone before I go back through. You had a question?
Yeah, I've got a couple. I'll give you one.
Did you write them on your hand?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I call the capacity mode. You can just email us remoteappforum@microsoft.com. Actually, we have that out there, or post something on the forum. We actually look at the data on the back end, and we'll turn them on in capacity mode. It's not enabled by default. Like I said, our algorithm is getting smarter as more and more people use it. It's kind of interesting as an engineering group, because we kind of bucket all these people in at first, and we were looking at patterns, and we're trying to figure out everyone's patterns to make that algorithm good. And we couldn't, because a lot of people were using it for trial or proof of concept, and so they had irregular things. And so we had to really focus on, okay, who's using Azure Remote App in a production usage? And so we don't even look at people in trial anymore. We only look at people that are in production, and then only a certain segment of people in like a production paid mode to try to do that. And so as more and more people use Azure Remote App, our algorithm's getting smarter, and we're figuring out to do that. At the end of the day, it's COGS. Because if no one's using the service and we have all those VMs running, we're being charged compute. So it's actually, it's on us. We're not making enough money off of you. So it's for us to benefit from figuring that out. At the end of the day, we should solve your 9 a.m. scenario, and we'll do that. We'll just turn them all on because you guys mean that to us. Yes. Yes.
And that was somehow tied to EMS and RDS CALS already in place. Can
yes.
you explain how that is?
Yeah, so I covered that in my fundamentals. I didn't really dive into here. So if you have EMS, it's $6 per user per month. If you have, you've already purchased RDS CALS and you're a software assurance and you have partial coverage, it's $8 per user. But if you have RDS CALS at full coverage for your organization, then it's only $2 a user per month.
Okay. All right. So is that based on the basic plan or irrelevant of the plan?
Irrelevant.
Okay. Is that just come in or is that?
Yeah, that just those pricing incentives just went live last month.
Will that be retrospective?
No.
Okay.
No. I wish my cell phone bill worked that way. That would be so, cool. Yes, sir. It's done through an EA level up in that. Yeah, your Microsoft account licensing representative or account team will process and best answer that on that. If not, email me and I'll find those guys and get them in touch. So, yes, sir. That's recommended. Oh, I see. Is it closer to the data or the user? Azure has some pretty cool networking things that they do. So like if you have two VNets connected, ExpressRoute is like outside in, but like within Azure, your VNets, Azure, we have lots of fast tunneling between those. So it kind of depends upon how you have your VNets configured, if it spans multiple ones or not, and dependent upon that. But in terms of like the remoting performance, you always want to put it closer to where you're at. So I would, you just need to test it out. I think going through, you know, I talked about the latency between the VPNs. I would just do some simple ping tests and some bandwidth calculations to figure that out. Anybody else? Questions? Nope. If you're here and you haven't asked a question yet. Cool. So, anything else over here? I don't want to. Cool. Well, I hope, did this provide you guys that level of information, kind of everything that it needed to?
Thank you.
Cool. All right. Anything it's missing? Any feedback? This is the first time I gave this one publicly. So,
free shots.
Free shots. Wow. Free
shirts. Shots as well.
Shirts? They didn't give. She didn't give me any shirts or swag to give out. So that question over here, sir, thank you. Cool. Well, yes?
One last one.
Go ahead.
The telemetry. Is any of that going to be available for the end user so that we can look at the environments that we're managing? We can look and see where problems might be when we're troubleshooting?
You know, we're struggling with that right now, like to try to figure out how much we give you. And we're kind of on the fence of leading towards talking with customers to understand it. So we want to be more turnkey, like Office 365, in the hopes that you won't have to do a lot of that. Yeah. But at the end of the day, we're finding that customers still want it. But then that's a legacy holdover because you're doing that already today. You've purchased Citrix or some great monitoring solution, and you're looking at that. Because at the end of the day, you're trying to figure out, hey, I have this one big server, and there's 200 people on it or something, and I don't want to run out of capacity. So Azure Remote App, if you pick the right billing plan, we should automatically handle it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of our expectation. So you pick a premium plan, you shouldn't really have to worry about it, because you've kind of figured out that that user doesn't need a whole lot, or he's not going to eat a lot. And so it's a fine line to look at it. There are some unique things, like app launch and other, you know, just admin things that we want to alert you on. But I would love to put you in touch with Momita or Pavithra.
Pavithra.
Okay.
Catalan.
Okay, perfect.
So we've been working with them with a customer called Landscape Solutions.
Oh, yes, yes. They're here in Australia.
You've heard of them. Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
They asked me to come and talk to them, but I didn't have time.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, yes. So I can tell you that the whole licensing change thing is going to go down like a treat.